Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Chris Cameron, my co-host, Felicity Sidnell Reed, and our guest this week, Carol Payne. Carol, you and I are old acquaintances because we were fellow students at a course at U of T we both took in memoir writing. And I guess, in a way, This Is Us Doing Church is a kind of memoir, or rather 76 mini-memoirs of Metropolitan. How did you find your authors and persuade them to contribute their memories? And then how do they know what to write about?
Well, they often ask, what will I write about? And my answer was always the same. I want you to write about Metropolitan and you. And they would ask, and how long should it be? And I would always say, the length that it takes to write your story. And that was the only help that I gave them. I stood up in front of the congregation and I suggested this project that we collect stories and celebrate the 200th anniversary of the church. And I gave them four options. One of them was to write stories and hand them in. One of them was to say, if you don't feel confident about writing and you'd rather be interviewed, we'll come and interview. The third option was what I called memory circles of memory. So older people don't remember all the time everything they're supposed to remember. But if you gather them together, it's amazing how the stories get put together. And so we did that. And then the fourth option was a writing workshop with Sue Reynolds, who was my writing teacher at the time, who offered to give us this workshop for free because she was so interested in the stories that I'd been telling her in writing in my own memoir about Metropolitan that she did that. And we had 10 people in that. And we had 7 stories out of the 10 people who came that ended up in the book. So that was really worthwhile. I also asked individuals across the congregation, this wide representation of people. And then I had to keep asking. And gradually the pieces came in. And then as the pieces came in, there were 10 pieces, and then there were 20 pieces, and then there were 30 pieces. And by the time there were 50 pieces, people said, this is a real thing. And so other people came and they helped, because at the very beginning, I really just had an idea. I had no idea how to do what we were doing, but these were the ways we started. And as for choosing, we decided to accept them all. Whoever wrote, they had a story to tell. And if you say, if you write, we'll print it, and then you don't, then that really makes a person feel bad. But all the stories were interesting, and people really liked it, and they really, really, really were proud.
I think that's a great approach, isn't it? But I suppose that probably the first couple of stories came slowly and then it came faster and faster.
Absolutely.
All of a sudden you had 76 stories. How did you organize the book? How did you decide what went where?
Well, if I'd had a chance to read all of these stories, there are four big committees in the church. One of them is arts, one of them is faith, one of them is congregation. Our community and one of them is outreach. And so somehow our little committee that ended up working together sat down and we divided them all up and they all fit in a fairly even kind of way. And the stories that were left over were in another category that we called foundations. They were mostly about the building. And all the time we had that business of going to the person if we didn't quite understand something we thought maybe needed to be edited, and we take it back to them and said, I don't understand this word, can you tell us what this is? I don't understand this, is this right? Is this a right detail? We think it might be different. And we did it that way. So everybody knew their own stuff and nobody knew the whole until the book was out. And then they got a chance to see everything. It was really special.
I want to be sure we leave lots of time for you to read from This Is Us in Church, because there are so many stories. So let's hear some of them now. Perhaps you could introduce each one as we go and tell us who wrote it and what it's about.
The Woman in Pink, Dr. Malcolm Sinclair. Thanksgiving Sunday, 1988. My second Sunday in a new ministry. Just before service, Dr. Patricia Wright came into the church office to announce that a strange visitor had entered the choir room during the morning run-through. It was a woman in a pink housecoat and fluffy slippers. Upon checking the room, it seemed that she had gone. We processed, and as the choir and clergy climbed up the stairs to the chancel, we noted that the woman in pink was processing right there behind us. She mounted the steps and turned left, entering the back row of the stalls with the choirmen. When the children stepped out to sing their song, our visitor stood behind them, swaying her arms above her head, keeping time. The children sang with the discipline of worship veterans, looking neither right nor left. Midway through the service, the woman in pink emerged from the choir stalls, stood before the Thanksgiving pumpkin display, took out her false teeth, genuflected, and placed the dentures on the largest pumpkin. Then, with a swift turn, she made an about-face and marched down the center aisle and out of the church. News of this occurrence went through choirs and fellow congregations like wildfire all that day. Metropolitan, the church that puts teeth into the worship experience. The next morning, a somewhat sheepish man came into the office to ask if someone had left a set of teeth behind. We returned them in a plastic bag with a sympathetic smile and carried on into week three of the new pastoral adventure.
That's a priceless story. I love that one. What else would you like to read for us?
So this is from a young woman who had a lot of health issues. Lisa wrote about coming to Metropolitan after she had a life-altering experience at St. Michael's Hospital across the street and almost died. She became increasingly a part of the community, and this is a fragment at the very end of her story about a really proud moment. The greatest honor comes when Malcolm and John Joseph, the ministers, ask if I will christen the church's newly built ramp and lift that now make the north end of the church and the chancel fully accessible. I ride with a lantern on my lap, feeling very proud and important. When I arrive at the chancel and see the congregation, I am beaming and feel as if I am floating with my steel wheelchair.
What a wonderful image. Thank you very much.
Okay, and then the last one is just a few seconds long. It's called The Great Fire.
So this is an eyewitness account from a little girl of the fire that destroyed the church back in 1928, almost 100 years ago.
A little girl who had just turned 9 years old, 9 days before the fire, gives a witness of what she saw that night from a long perspective later. The night was very cold. We gathered in the upper bedroom to watch the firefighters put the fire out. The flames lit the room bright. The stained glass windows glittered in the light as they shattered from flame and fire hose water. Ice, lots of ice from the fire hoses and on the remains of the church the next day.
Such a short snippet, but so vivid, literally a chilling story. Thank you for that one. Now, I understand you have a contribution yourself you made, and would you like to read that to us now?
Dancing in the Aisles, Christmas 2017. An image surfaces from last year's afternoon Christmas carol sing. All of us already sated with music of children and choir and bells and band and story told and word preached, and as if that weren't enough, Christmas lunch to fill us completely. The highlight of the silver band carol sing happens when Fran Harvey comes down into the congregation and leads us in a rousing rendition of The Virgin Had a Baby Boy. I'd not yet seen anyone take up her suggestion of dancing in the aisles to the infectious beat. We're pretty traditional amongst our fixed pews and too many aging knees. But there was a woman in front of me who I guessed by the way she moved easily out of the pew and into the aisle was from the Caribbean. She danced with such a smile on her face, she lifted every one of us up until the two women inevitably collided, the one lost in the music, the other leading it, backing up the aisle towards the band. It was a big bump. More surprised than harm done. When I looked up, the stranger had disappeared. I looked again. There she was, on the podium, conducting the band in perfect time, everyone pleased and delighted with this turn of events. At that moment, her joy shone, reflecting Mary's words more profoundly than anyone else in the building. Magnificat, magnificat, my soul doth magnify the Lord, and my spirit rejoiceth in God my Savior.
Thank you so much, Carol. That was great. Where can listeners buy a copy of your book, This Is Us Doing Church?
So there are currently 14 copies of the book still left in a printing of 250. And we will be reprinting after the COVID is over and the printing shops are open. They can get in touch with the church on Queen Street East in Toronto. And the telephone number is 416-363-0331.
Many thanks to Carol Payne for telling us about This Is Us Doing Church and about her life in the church. Thank you very much, Carol.
Well, you're welcome. It was my pleasure.
To connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for who we might interview in future programs to us at our website, wordonthehills.com, where all these programs are archived and available to listeners at any time. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.